Welcome back to the Midweek Minute Edition of the Man Cave Caucus Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Baker. We're here in the Capitol Office Studio, room 403A, if you didn't know. And we're ready to dive into some important information on a certain topic today. But with me, I have a guest who is breathing incessantly into his microphone. who is now, I suppose, becoming a frequent flyer of the show. The one and only Representative Bishop Davidson. And who, just a mention of the man with two such distinguishing last names makes my IQ feel threatened. Oh, but I'm okay. I'm okay with it. Iron sharpens iron, right? Right?
That's right. That's okay. Right.
Good to have you on again, Bishop.
The man with two last names.
Yes. That's did good. You like that?
I did.
So I want to talk about and really devote this entire episode to the issue of education reform. Mm-hmm. And of course, no better person to have to talk about that than the chairman of, is it the special committee?
Special Committee on Education Reform, not the Committee on Special Education. I have accidentally
not
said
to be
that.
Confused
I've
with.
I've said that before, and then I'm like, wait a second.
Hold on.
So I just say Education Reform now. I don't even do the
okay.
The special part.
And that's a new committee this year, right?
It is a new committee this year.
Why do you think that has been formed?
Because it's hard to get education reform bills, which the people of Missouri deserve. And leadership wants through the current education committee.
Yeah.
And so
which
what
I'm
you,
on.
What do you do when you have a complicated path through a committee and it's ambiguous whether or not you can get legislation through? You create
Form
a new
another
committee.
Committee and stack it, right?
Yeah. And so we are stacked, as they say. But
so yeah. When I use the term ed reform or education reform, Can you talk a little bit about what that term encompasses and when that is used in, you know, because there's a lot of these phrases I think that sometimes we as legislators use and people may have a really wide view of what that is or definition of what that is. And so let's kind of define that a little bit and talk about how we use that and in what context.
Well, and I'm going to give you that first wide view because when I think ed reform, as the chair, as an elected member who is pursuing education reform packages, I think of empowering parents and enabling teachers. And I think it's these two individuals that are at the heart of whether or not a child has a successful education.
Yes.
If you said, what is the singular biggest problem in our current education system, and you have to use secular terms, you can't talk about your faith, I would say it is that parents don't see themselves as primary educators. That's the single biggest issue. And then I also think that there's real challenges beyond that. I think there's 1,000 other issues, of course. But that's why I say empower parents, enable teachers. Now, you start to get down to that, and you've got all the phrases about school choice or this, that, and the other. I mean, I think there are pillars. I think choice has to be a part of it. It's one of those pillars. But I think teacher certification reform has to be a part of it. How do we recruit and retain? How do we recruit the best and brightest among us into the classroom?
Mm-hmm.
I think
in public education.
Yeah, that's right. And how do we hold our taxpayer dollars accountable? How do we tie autonomy to those dollars so that those districts that are doing well are going to be given the regulatory freedom to continue doing
and
well and innovate, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, exactly. Because they're going to be able to find new and better ways, improved ways of educating our children a lot better than you, me, and Desi in Jefferson City are. And so I would like to see an empowerment of parents through choice, and I'd like to see enabling teachers by removing all these administrative burdens, whether those are burdens in the district level, burdens from the Desi level, burdens from
and
whatever.
Desi is what?
Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. Yeah.
Again, another term that sometimes we use that maybe some people may not know.
You're right. I appreciate that. So so those are some of the pillars of education reform. Now, the hot topic of the week is this very specific bill. And so there's your big broad view, right? Big broad vision, empower parents, enable teachers. Then there are your kind of your pillars. ranging from the way we finance our schools and our public education system.
Yeah, so funding is a part of that.
You know, funding's a part of that. Teacher certification, accountability, assessment. I would say autonomy is a part of that. And there's other things too. You know, don't get me wrong, but then you've got specific bills that come up, and there's quite a few education bills that have gone through either side, you know, and been worked on or talked about. But there's really one bill in particular that has a path forward, and it's a very significant bill. It's come through the Senate. It, I think, got 22 votes in its adoption, because there's lots of votes. It got 22 votes in its third read, which is the last vote that it does before it comes to the House. But in its adoption, which is not a different bill by even one comma, its adoption vote actually had 4 Democrats vote for it. So it had 22 Republicans vote for it on its last vote. But it even had, I think it was up to like 25 votes or something like that, with 4 Democrat votes voting for its adoption, which is a very strong signal that there's a lot of support behind this, which is a good indicator for us in the House of whether or not a package has been created that's going to get through.
Have consensus
through,
to get done.
You know, get to 82, which is the majority here in our chamber as well. And that bill is Senate Bill 727. And it's become significant. And there are pieces that I don't like, you know, and you know this. It's so challenging because we have to look at bills that we like and look at bills that we don't like. And then they start to get combined and we have to weigh what is best for the people of Missouri. Is this more good than bad? Is it a greater good politically? Is the policy this? Is it do this? And all of those micro decisions get summed up in a single decision for you and I.
Right.
And that is in a green button that says yes and a red button that says no.
And that's tough sometimes.
It's very tough.
A lot of times.
Yeah, I'd love a 1 through 100 scale.
Right.
And if I'm 50 to 100, I'm a yes. Yeah. And if I'm 1 to 49, I'm a no. And then you get to see the gradation of my support, right?
Yeah, with all the nuances.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, I'm a 54 yes. You know, like I'll vote for this, but there's some stuff I don't like.
Yeah.
Versus some bills that you filed, I'd be 100% of the way. Like, let's do it. I might as well have filed it myself. That'd be kind of interesting. That's a kind of fun little theoretical topic. But yeah, so we've got this package that's very complicated. And the situation in the building right now is it has not been changed. We have a hearing tomorrow. The ability to exec tomorrow, we did post notice, but the likelihood of execing next week, and execing is an executive session. That's when a bill goes to a committee. It has to be voted out of that committee. And it's not done during the public hearing portion of the committee. It's done during what's called executive session.
Right.
And so we say execing.
And that's where it can be, the language can be modified.
That's exactly right. That's where the language can be amended. I will tell you, the intent is to not change this language. And I, you know, I know some of your listeners, and they're smart people. And if they don't know the answer, they're probably asking the smart question, well, why? Why can't it be changed?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like something about it, Bishop, why aren't you changing it? Well, any change we make here in the House then sends that bill back over to the Senate. And if I ask anyone off the halls of the Capitol, do you think that a bill such as this would get through the Senate if we send it back? Well, here, I'll ask you, what do you think? Would it get through?
I think it'd be very unlikely.
Very unlikely. I told someone downstairs, I said, I think we got like an 80% shot of passing this right now. And if we send it back to the Senate, I think we have like a 5%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I think that's really it.
Yeah, because there's so many ways it could die.
So many ways it could die.
People who want it to die.
And it was so carefully crafted and balanced. So to change anything creates a very big question mark. Are you disrupting that balance? Not to mention, the further you get in session, the harder it is to pass a bill. So the likeliness of changing it is low. And so where we're at right now is we've got to whip the bill for what it is. We can't change it. We can't adapt it. Fortunately, we had negotiated a lot of it in the House, in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
The House position was negotiated in the Senate. And we've got to whip up to 82 votes on our own without any changes. If we do that, you know the term. It's truly agreed and finally passed. at which point it goes to the governor's desk. So that's a little bit of a situation.
It's like a 30,000-foot view of this bill. Yeah. So, you know, when we're talking about public education reform, there, like we said, there's a lot of things that figure into that. You know, our taxes pay for the education of our children.
Yeah.
That's a constitutional mandate that we have in the state of Missouri.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, the guiding principle of when it comes to spending that money that goes toward education as a state and as a local school district who receives allocated dollars for education— You know, we're talking about the what then is the priority of education? So understanding that principle of funding, where does Missouri stand on that currently, like with the flexibility of the public funds that is allocated for education and the flexibility of parents being able to have options for education that fits the needs of their child with academics and and also the needs and wishes of the parents regarding other things, maybe social issues and you know, things that have found its way into the classroom.
So I
think the fight, if you boil it all down, it really does come down to funding as far as about as far as the fight in the legislature and then the philosophy of education, the directive of parents being in control, which I strongly believe is should be the guiding principle of this. Historically, Republicans have been in favor of, you know, the money following the child for education. It's in our Republican Party platform. So talk a little bit about the bill, kind of a summary of what it does, the moving parts of that, and in essence of how those dollars, what would change from what we have currently for options for parents through the education savings account and what this bill would do. And then we can talk about that a little bit.
So we passed empowerment scholarship accounts 3 years ago, I guess it was. Goes by quick. We passed it 3 years ago, and it was a pilot program.
And we passed it with 82 votes,
With the exact number, and it was quite a day. And then when it passed in the Senate, boy, that's a story.
It is a story.
And I think, you know, I was right there in the middle of it. I got you got to have Burleson on, our Congressman Burleson on, to talk about that story.
We'll have to do that.
I'm going to tease your listeners now. It is a story, guys. It's a fun one to tell.
One for the books.
I'd love to be there while he tells it if I could, but if you can just get him on here, because your listeners love it, and I don't retell it near as well as he does. But ESA's passed, and it was by the skin of his teeth, which meant it was also pretty significantly compromised. At the end of the day, it was a pilot program with a cap of $25 million, $50 million, $25 million. And what that cap was how many tax credits were allowed to be given out to people who donated to education assistance EAOs. Education assistance opportunities, something like that. These organizations that disperse those scholarships, and those scholarships were the state advocacy target of like $6,700-ish, and it allowed for parents to take advantage of their tax dollars and the tax allotment for their child's education and spend it on things like private school tuition or parochial school. It allowed them to spend it on things like tuition or therapy services or curricula. And there were lots of standards, right? I mean, they had to have been in public school before they, you know, they had to have, you know, enrolled in public school for a year before they were able to get it. And then there were prioritizations amongst that qualifying, you know, qualifiers of that group as well. And so, or prioritizations and qualifications, I should say. The prioritizations were students with an IEP. So students with special needs were prioritized.
Would get preference.
That's right. And then that it would be followed by students who were 200% or beneath the federal poverty line.
So lower income.
Lower income. That was a priority. And then your other students could take advantage of it. But we've never actually gotten to the other students, I don't think, with the current amount that we have, because it's actually a relatively small sum of money that only can apply to like 6,000 students at most, if it's fully if that tax credit's fully taken advantage of by Missouri charity, or Missourians charity, I should say. And then the qualifications of that bill were that you live in a city of 35,000 people or more.
Right.
And so that limited greatly the number of areas across Missouri that could take advantage of this. Students in Springfield, students in Columbia, students in Jefferson City, students in St. Louis, students in Kansas City and in Joplin. But a lot of rural areas it had carved out. That is the starting point. And I know I got in the weeds there, but yeah. I'm just trying to give some
explanation. No, I think it's important to point out, too, that, again, the rural areas, like my district, for instance, no one in my district could access an ESA because of the way that the law was passed several years ago, limiting that to cities of 35,000 or more.
Yeah. And so this bill does a lot of things, but the starting point was expanding empowerment scholarship accounts in that program. And it expanded it to a $75 million cap. And to give you a little bit of a frame of reference, our budget for state education, which, by the way, is somewhere in the ballpark of like 20 to 25% of local school districts' budget. So we're not even talking about the 70% generated locally.
Right.
We're not even talking about the 8 to 12% generated by federal dollars. But our state budget is around $10 billion.
Right.
So that 25 million number, I mean, I don't know if I can do the math here quick enough. $100 million is a 1%.
Yeah.
That 25 million was a quarter of 1%. And this $75 million, which is now in this bill, that cap, it is 0.75% of 1%. It's three-fourths of 1%. We're not even to 1%.
Of the state budget for education.
Of the state budget for education, which is only
25%.
20 to 25% of education budgets at your school districts.
Right, because a lot of their dollars comes from local taxes.
And so you're talking a third the size of that. I mean, so you're talking significantly less than a quarter of 1% of education funding. So that's the scope of the program now. That being said, it is a serious expansion because it triples it, right?
Right.
And so that's one big change. Another big change, so now you've got your limit expanded, your cap.
As far as dollars.
And then you've got your qualifications expanded. Remember, our qualifications were that you have to live in a population of 35,000 people or more. So now what that does is it gets rid of that qualification. So now it's accessible to anyone. Now, mind you, it probably only applies to somewhere in the ballpark of 12,000 students, so it's not like everyone's able to do it. We have around a million students, by the way.
So there's a waiting list.
Yeah, exactly. There would be, certainly. And so it expands your qualifications and makes it more accessible, those scholarship accounts. And then thirdly, it expands the prioritizations. Mm-hmm. So the students with an IEP remain at the top of that preferential treatment, followed by students not of 200% or below the federal poverty line, but now 300% or below the federal poverty line. It was 400%, and I think they changed that. And I'm trying to remember what that number is because, you want to give some texture to it, some realness. And I think it's something like a family of four that makes 150 is 300%, or maybe 175 even. So a lot of Missourians, a lot of folks who can't.
Could have access.
But a lot of Missourians could have access because we get rid of those geographical limits, and we also expand that preferential treatment. And so those are the big ways in which the fundamentals of that bill expand a program which we found to be successful over the last 3 years.
So expansion of the cap and then really elimination of some of the requirements or at least lowering that to where that more people have access.
And the best way to think of it is really, right, what did I say at the beginning is our goal? Empowering parents.
Right.
We're able with this legislation to empower more parents.
Well, and you see, like through COVID, I think a lot of this was really changed in the minds of parents when schools were shut down. A lot of things started happening through that time where you see a major spike, right, of parents pulling their students out of public education, putting them into either private school or homeschooling their kids for different reasons. And I think there's a lot of other things that figure into it. Woke indoctrination that has infiltrated some of our public education is a part of that. But one of the things I want to talk about a little bit is in the last couple years, it's kind of a strange thing, a little bit new, really, in my opinion, a bit of an alarming approach to ed reform that seems a bit misguided to me. Can you talk a little bit about that? You know, where it's coming from? What is the angle? Yeah. Is it just a front to use government intervention as this fear factor and reason to actually protect public education only? Or is it backed by, you know, maybe the teachers unions or education lobbyist groups or whatever it might be? And, you know, there's been this debate that has popped up regarding homeschool. I'm a strong advocate for homeschool. Mm-hmm. You are as well. I think you homeschooled, correct?
No,
at least some of your education.
Yeah, I was for 1 year. But here's the joke: I'm one of nine kids, and apparently it's the way I talk. I talk like an old man or something. I don't know, but I'm always told you were homeschooled, right? You're an Eagle Scout, right? And I'm like, no. But I am very complimented. Thank you. Like, I right. I'm flattered. You think I'm an Eagle Scout or a homeschooler? As far as I'm concerned, that's awesome. I have family who's been homeschooled, family who is currently homeschooling. I was homeschooled for a year. And the homeschoolers are the OG choicers, you know? They're the guys who started the Ed Choice movement because they looked at the public education system and they said, yeah, that's not going to cut it. Mm-hmm. We're not going to allow this to be done to our kids, and we're going to do something about it, which is awesome, which is so cool. And so I've always had respect, always appreciated the community. But yeah, there's been a lot of confusion, and I think some misinformation. And I can't tell you where it's sourced or why it happens. I can tell you some of the arguments that are used sometimes. And honestly, I don't completely mind it. I love vigilance. Mm-hmm. I would rather a little bit of misinformed vigilance than apathy.
Yeah, cause from, us from to home, be extra careful yeah, for, and cautious. For the homeschool.
And so the homeschool community, when this legislation, the House version, had come through the committee, they came to testify, and they said, hey, your school choice, the ESAs, all cool, all good. Please don't make homeschoolers a part of it. And right now, homeschoolers can receive those. They said, we'd like to just be excluded. And we went, oh, okay. Well, why? Mm-hmm. You know, and they said, we just like our current definitions as are, and we don't want any sort of incremental steps. Usually with money comes power and yada, yada, and we don't want to take the
strings
money.
Strings attached.
Yeah, yeah. And I go, oh, okay, yeah, those are arguments that I've heard for a lot of things. Those are arguments I've made for a lot of things.
Right.
Okay, that's a pretty interesting position. And so what I did, I sat down with some homeschool families. I sat down with some constituents of mine, sat down with some association folks, and said, let's get to work.
Yeah.
Where are we at? And so what we had come up with was, let's separate the homeschool definition completely separate in its own statutory silo so that it's completely as well as we can with statute, mind right. you. I'd love to have a constitutional amendment that did this, but completely protected by statute and gives no reason for any ed reform conversation to ever include homeschoolers again because we're happy with the definition. We like it. We like Missouri statute and where it's at.
Yeah, we have a strong homeschool
we
statute.
We do. We do.
Or home education
and
statute.
So we separated that, and then we created the family paced education, and we put that in a separate part of the statute, nowhere near the homeschooling statute. And the homeschooling statute would now say specifically you can't take dollars mm-hmm. from this program. You're no
as
longer,
it's currently
yeah,
defined.
Yeah, you're no longer qualified as a homeschooler if you do that. And it specifically says, is not a family-based education.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
So really separated those definitions and then created this category of a family-based education. And the people I imagine doing this are probably folks who were in public school who are now leaving public school to take advantage of this opportunity to choose their child's education, right, who are maybe on the fence about it, but now see some incentive to do so.
Right.
And they want to purchase curricula for their child for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Maybe their child's bullied persistently. Maybe they have
A
learning disability. Maybe they have a unique opportunity where they travel often for work and they want to be able to educate their child through experiential traveling, as well as more of a traditional classroom setting. And I don't know, right? The point isn't that we know. In fact, I think the point is that we don't. The point is that we don't, and that we trust parents to be looking out for the best interests of their child and taking in all the circumstances of their life and saying, this is what's best for my home.
Right.
Which is the whole, that's the cornerstone.
The principle of
homeschooling is that too. And then it's also the principle of choice. And so what we did is we separated homeschoolers entirely, but then we allowed for a path for a Missourian to utilize these Empowerment Scholarship Account dollars to buy curricula and educate their child at home under the category of family-based education. And then, of course, we have the other approved educational entities as well, parochial, private school tuition, charter schools, things like that. And a lot of homeschoolers were really happy with that statute because it created the statutory silo. But then you had some organizations push back, and I've heard a lot of issues from homeschoolers. But unfortunately, I've heard issues like, we don't want money. We don't want homeschoolers to take money. And this specifically says they can't take money. Mm-hmm. I've heard, we don't want to register. Well, this doesn't make you register. In fact, and someone asked me, and they said, oh, wait, what, it doesn't? They said, so what does this change about what I do next year with my child's education as a homeschool mom? I said, and this is true, literally nothing.
Right.
You don't have to talk to anyone. You don't have to say anything. You don't, like,
there's no mandate.
Literally, there's not even an option. It's not right. only not a mandate, there's literally nothing. Like, this bill affects your life zero. Now, it does better than that. What it does with that statutory silo is it ensures anytime we have education reform conversations in the future, that we have no reason to open up that education definition, that homeschooling definition.
Right.
Because it's currently in the compulsory education statute 167031. Mm-hmm. And those homeschooler listeners out there are going to go, yeah, that's our statute. It's a great statute.
Right.
And it takes that definition, puts it in 167012 by itself, so that when we do ed reform talk, which by the way leads you to 167031 because you've got to talk compulsory education requirements when you talk ed reform. We're no longer opening up the statute where the homeschool definition resides. We're actually protecting it from being opened. And then we are even rhetorically and politically getting to a point where we don't even have to talk about homeschoolers. Mm-hmm. We talk about family-based education. We talk about parochial schools. We talk about all these other things. Homeschoolers, they just kind of fade into the background, which my belief is what we want for them.
Yeah,
and that's so, what they want for themselves too.
In essence, what that does is it gives a choice for those who would like to have access to an ESA to provide homeschooling for their children or home education for their children.
Yeah, family-based education.
Family-based education without causing any problem of government interference or strings attached to
without any risk of that. And then can I give you a little bit of a bigger vision? I know I'm taking up your time here.
No, it's good. I like
it. A bigger vision, and this is what's important. I think it helps homeschoolers today because it creates a statutory silo. I think it improves the statute, which is maybe like three ways in which you can improve the statute, by the way. But not only does it do it today, here's the bigger kicker. If we continue down the path that we're on with our current public education system, we're not always going to be Republican, 10, 15, 20 years from now. Who knows what's going to happen? And when that happens, do you think that the Democrat-controlled legislature isn't going to hunt down homeschoolers?
Right.
I did have one parent tell me, well, my kids will be out by that time. I went,
That's not
my responsibility.
Terrible way
my
of thinking.
Responsibility is to think about you and to think about the parents 20 years from now.
And my kids' kids.
And my kids' kids. That's right. And so here's the kicker. The current public education system is an education of conformity and compliance, right?
Yeah.
Homeschoolers know this. That's why they left.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a culture of compliance. If you don't think that they're going to force you to comply or try to, if you don't think that's going to produce a constituency that elects a legislative body that is going to try and force you to comply, We got to start thinking a little bit further down the line.
Yes.
However, if we start to promote a culture, not of education compliance, but a culture of education choice, where parents are empowered to make educational decisions for their children in all sorts of ways, that's going to be the culture that elects a legislative body, whether they're Democrat or Republican, that prioritizes education choice, because we need the issue to be bipartisan.
Yes.
And that's
truly about educating children with an excellent education.
That's right. And that's accomplished by big tenting this education choice movement. The homeschoolers started it, and we've got to broaden it in order to protect them.
Well, and I think it's, you know, if somebody has that mentality of only caring about them and themselves and not caring about the future, not caring about what happens beyond when their children are educated, I think that's really short-sighted. And dangerous, you know, and really a selfish way of thinking. I mean, yes, I of course I'm going to prioritize my own family and my kids, but as a legislator, I have to think about the future, and I have to think about what it's going to be like for my grandkids and great grandkids when it comes to education. And that's why these decisions that we're making right now with education reform are so important.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I think broadly it furthers it. Does it do it all in one fell swoop? No, it's a step. But
right.
it starts
but
to
the momentum
create,
is growing.
It creates a culture of education choice, and a culture of education choice is the culture that Republican or Democrat is going to protect the rights of homeschoolers in the future. Whereas the current culture of education compliance, which is peddled by our current public education system, it's only going to create a legislative body interested in interested in education compliance.
Yeah.
And so I think this bill helps homeschoolers in a lot of ways. But that was the conversation I had with him, and I greatly appreciate it, because guess what? None of that would have happened in terms of the statutory silo. None of that would have happened without them. And that's why I love the vigilance. I love the conversation.
Right.
And I was really, really appreciative, and I've really enjoyed getting to know the homeschool community even more broadly across the state. I mean, I knew it in my district.
Right.
But now I feel like I've got a much better grasp of that.
Well, I think it's so important to engage them as well. You know, I have a huge, a very strong community in my area of people who send their kids to private school, maybe private Christian school, but also homeschool their kids. And this is something that I think is so important for them to understand, is that we are paying attention to protecting the ability and the right to do that, because it's a God-given right. And that's something that I as a parent take very seriously.
My brother's a homeschool dad, you know?
Yeah, I am too. I mean, my daughters have all homeschooled at least part of their education. I homeschooled 1 year. I went to Christian private school for the rest of that time when I was growing up. And I'm so happy and thankful that my mom and dad made the sacrifices that they did at that time. There was nothing for them. Mm-hmm. And they put seven of their, you know, they had seven kids. I'm the oldest, seven children through private Christian school, which was very expensive. And, you know, was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears for them as parents to do that. But I wouldn't probably be here today were it not for that education. Mm-hmm. And my siblings that have done so well and been so successful in business and in other endeavors in their lives, I think are directly connected to the education that fit for us best when we were growing up, and that my mom and dad recognized that. And so this is something that they're again, the momentum for people doing this, I think, is growing. And it's incumbent upon us to address those issues moving forward when it comes to education reform.
Yeah. Yeah. So there are other parts of the bill, obviously, and we could spend hours and hours like poring over it. But those are two big significant pieces, and those are pieces that have been relevant to a lot of constituencies. I think will be relevant to your listeners as well. And those are the pieces that I've been most personally involved in, and personally involved in crafting. And the other pieces, a lot of it has been pre-negotiated in the Senate and how to get it through that chamber, and pre-negotiated in the Senate on how to get it through the House, and just getting us to those numbers that we need to get to.
So, you know, for people out there who are listening to this, what can they do? What can they do to help on this issue if it's something that they support? What is their best use of time and resources to help move this forward when we're talking about education reform?
Yeah. I mean, you could always reach out to your lawmaker, right?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, if your listeners are all in your constituency, you're going to be a staunch supporter. But there's some reps out there who we could use some support and some encouragement from you guys on out there in the southwest Missouri.
Yeah,
I'm in southwest
True
Missouri,
southwest.
But you're southwest. You know, and reach out. You can reach out to lawmakers across the state, because here's the thing: we represent our constituency and our district, but we also represent everyone in the state because we make decisions that affect everyone in the state.
That's right.
And so you can reach out if you're really fervent to any lawmaker. Let them know why you'd appreciate their support. We have a hearing tomorrow. I don't know when this podcast is out, but
it'll be live in the morning.
Okay, yeah. I mean, you can get on there quickly if you're listening right now. Get on there quickly and see if you can do some online testimony, and that can be in the record, and we'll have that online testimony. I will say,
and all that testimony is live, by the way, on
all
the
that
website.
Testimony is live. I will say, we are not going to struggle with the votes in committee. If there was a struggle to get votes, it would be on the House floor. And I don't want to discourage anyone from submitting testimony, live or in person or whatever, right? Or online. But if you're sitting here listening and going, okay, I could do online testimony for the committee, or I could send an email to my rep, send an email to your rep.
Yeah.
I'm the chair of the committee. I'm very confident about this. Your testimony will be appreciated, and we love public hearing. We will be getting this bill through committee. Your help is most effective when it comes to the House floor.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's it, right? At the end of the day, is making your voice heard as a constituency, whether it's your rep in your district.
Just people being engaged, and I think having a better grasp of the issues, especially when it comes to education, I think is important. It is a complex issue. It's something that there's just so many moving parts to that. But breaking that down a little bit and helping people get a better understanding, I think, helps tremendously. So I appreciate you coming on, Bishop, once again, and it looks like we're making this a regular occasion. So
happy to be here. Yeah. It's an interesting package. You know, I asked one of my soups today, my superintendents today, and said, "Would you vote yes or no?" Bell rings. You got to walk in. What are you doing, brother? And he said, "You know, like there's a few questions." He goes, "But I'm pressing yes."
Yeah.
And so it's a very interesting package with a lot of things that a lot of people like, a couple things that a lot of people don't like.
Yeah.
But
which usually means it's probably good legislation.
Yeah. Well, it's good enough. You know,
you're never going to get anything that everybody likes.
Yeah. So, but we'll see what we can do, and definitely appreciate being on here. Love talking with you. Love talking with your listeners, and hopefully we get a chance to interact with them and as they get involved in the legislative process. And if you're listening going, "Well, I disagree," let me know that too. That's super interesting.
We're more than
love to hear from you.
More than willing to listen.
Don't listen to the lies that the left tells you. Or sometimes the right, which is if you disagree with someone, you hate them.
Right.
What BS?
Terrible.
It's terrible. It's a
horrible
totally,
way to legislate.
Totally antithetical.
And really a horrible way to live your life.
To a Republican form of government.
Yeah.
Totally antithetical to a society that prioritizes free speech. Right?
Yep.
And totally antithetical to critical thinking even.
Right. Have the tough conversations without trying to villainize the people that you disagree with on one thing.
And have them over dinner at your house. Right? Enjoy each other's company. Look for common ground where necessary. And if things get too tense, take a breather.
Yeah.
Come back.
I think the world would be a much better place if we put that into practice. So thank you so much. With that, don't forget, you can go over to Apple Podcasts, look at the podcast. You can leave us a 5-star review. Also on Spotify. Those are the two main platforms that the Man Cave Caucus podcast is published on. Share this content on your social media as well. And just tell your friends and neighbors about it. I think it's a good way to kind of stay up to date on issues and also be entertained in the process. So with that, we'll catch you on Monday's podcast. God bless.